This is In Focus, the weekly public affairs program from KTBB and the Team Sports Radio, featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place.
Well, good morning, everybody. Good to have you with us for In Focus. I'm Roger Gray. Welcome to the program, and I want to welcome Mari Gutierrez, who leads the Zero Suicide Program at the Andrews Center. And first of all, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Appreciate it. And why don't we, before we get into the specifics of the program, why don't we explain to people what the Andrews Center is all about?
Absolutely. So
is that general enough for you?
Yes, sure is. Okay. It's great. So Andrews Center, or Andrews Behavioral Health, we are the local mental health authority and we serve five counties. We serve Henderson, Raines, Smith, Van Zandt, and Wood counties, and we provide mental health services, substance use disorder services, crisis response services, mm-hmm. among a variety of other programs.
Oh yeah, kids, adult, you sort of deal with it all.
Whole age spectrum.
Okay. But your specific area is the Zero Suicide Program.
Yes, sir.
And you're calling it, is that Hearts Loss? Is that?
So that's two different programs,
actually.
Oh,
that's a different program. I'm sorry.
We wear different hats at Andrews. There's such a need to help people, so we take part in a lot of different programs. The Zero Suicide Team or model is an internal program at Andrews that looks at improving how we provide services, how we treat individuals who present with crises, to prevent suicide. It also looks at how we provide suicide safe practices in mm-hmm. the workplace. So Zero Suicide is all about minimizing suicide risk through proper screening and treatment and referral and services. Now, the Loss Team, which mm-hmm. I'm very excited to talk about today, is a brand new initiative. Now, this is led by Andrews, but it's going to be a community-run, community-led mm-hmm. operated endeavor. The Loss Team, which stands for Local Outreach to Suicide Survivors, serves the community, the five counties that we serve, and it helps connect people who have lost one of the more unimaginable kinds of deaths mm-hmm. by suicide, who've lost loved ones to suicide, connect them to resources and care. Because as you may know, suicide is a very stigmatized topic and kind of death. And so when a family member loses somebody to suicide, sometimes they don't know where to turn, who to talk to. Mm-hmm. Family members may be hesitant to reach out to, you know, the survivors. So the Loss Team, we are actively recruiting volunteers who are caring, compassionate people in the community mm-hmm. who want to help connect those who are newly bereaved to care.
Ah.
And the team, so we are hosting a training in 2 weeks, Friday, January 23rd at Andrews Center in Tyler. Mm-hmm. A 9-to-4 training is going to be the onboarding and orientation. So that will be where community members who want to learn about the Loss Team, who may want to serve on the Loss Team, can come and spend a day with us to see what it's all about. Taking part in the training does not require or obligate anyone to serve on the team at all. Again, this is going to be a community-led and run initiative.
Well, and it, mm-hmm. you also have a chance to see, is this really for me? Is it, I want to help, but I'm not sure I can handle that sort of thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. We are.
I'm sorry, I interrupted.
No. That's absolutely correct. Though we are looking for team members who have lived experience with suicide loss. Mm. So these are people that have walked that walk, unfortunately, that have experienced losing a close loved one to suicide, and then have gone through their own grief and healing journey, and are ready to support people walking through this from brand new, from the start. Mm-hmm. We're also looking for people who work in the mental health field to support the team.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
How big a problem is this? How widespread a problem is suicide in our area?
Suicide is unfortunately a very big problem in East Texas and across the state. A lot of people don't realize this, but suicide rates are typically double that of homicide rates. Hmm. Currently in our area in East Texas, well, the state mortality rate is about 14 per 100,000 population. East Texas, it's up to 30 per 100,000 population in some counties. Mm. It's far above the state. It has been for several years.
Do we have any idea why?
There's so many reasons. suicide is so complex, it's never one reason.
No,
it's typically a lot of different factors. But some of the reasons why we think in our area in particular is, well, we're a big state. We have a lot of people.
Sure.
But we're also pretty rural. And that means people can be spread out. They could be isolated. Mm-hmm. And some counties don't have as many resources as others. So a person in crisis, if they have to drive 30, 40 an hour, you know, that's tough to do. Especially when they're feeling alone.
The one time I worked outside of the state of Texas, and I've been doing this for 55 years, was in Wyoming, which has, if I'm not mistaken, I believe we reported this, the highest suicide rate in the country. Mm. It is also the least populated state in the country. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it, when we talk to experts, is attributed to isolation, loneliness.
Yes.
Nobody to talk to, nobody to vent your feelings to, that sort of thing. I gather that is somewhat of the problem here.
Absolutely, because loneliness is such a driving factor behind suicidality sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that's another reason why I do want to mention 988, that crisis lifeline that anyone can text, call, mm-hmm. or chat 24/7, because sometimes we just need a person to talk to. Mm-hmm. Whether it's 2 a.m. or the weekend, if we don't have someone that we can reach out and talk to, mm-hmm. that could make someone feel even more lonely and in despair, which adds to the problem.
Yeah. So, okay. Obviously, there are lots of causes. What are some of the things, and I being a person of a certain age, I think I just alluded to that with a 55-year career. You think about particularly young people today. And it's easy for somebody of my generation to say, oh, look, we all had problems. Come on. We all got dumped by a girlfriend. We all made a bad grade. We all got in trouble. We all disappointed our folks, et cetera, et cetera. And that is true as far as it goes. But there's more now, isn't there?
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah.
So we see higher rates of suicide at sort of the extremes of the age group. Some mm-hmm. of the highest rates are in adults age 65 and older.
Really?
That's
okay.
Typically where our higher suicide rates tend to be. But we're also seeing increases in younger individuals, 10 to 19, 20 to 25. When you look at those age brackets, you see pockets of high rates. And it comes down to loneliness again. So older individuals, you might lose your spouse. Mm-hmm. You are, your kids have moved out or you're retiring, and that mm-hmm. can be really isolating. But then for the younger folks, maybe it's social media. Maybe they are getting negative comments, negative interactions 24/7. If they have access to social media, then... Mm-hmm. If their parents are not talking to them about, you know, the dangers and safety of social media and online mm-hmm. presence, then sometimes younger individuals can take those messages to heart, unfortunately, because bullying used to be just at school, right?
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
now it's everywhere. It's 24/7.
There is a license that goes with being online, a license to say whatever you want with no things you would not say face to face, things that would not be a part of the bullying in the old days, one on one at school. And I am consistently amazed. It's changed for people in my business, for example. If somebody does not like what an anchor woman was wearing that night on the evening news, mm-hmm. they'll go full blast mm-hmm. as far as their critique, mm-hmm. and it gets very personal. Where in the old days, it used to just be like a letter, you know.
Right.
We didn't like that dress, whatever. It's like the anonymity amplifies it.
Unfortunately, it does. I think now more than ever, we need to practice kindness to each other. We need to practice compassion. If we see a person who is struggling, especially if we know them or work with them or go to church with them, we need to reach out and check in on them, mm-hmm. see how they're doing. And another really big endeavor from Andrews Behavioral Health, we offer free suicide prevention and intervention workshops to community members. So our workshops typically are for individuals 18 and older, just like our LOST team. We're recruiting 18 and older. But we can teach community members how to identify risk factors for suicide, how to have a caring conversation that can stop a person from feeling alone and making a choice that they may not be able to take back. I mean, you know, suicide deaths are horrible, but so are attempts. So if we can prevent an attempt that may lead to a death, it is possible. Suicide can be prevented. So we as an agency want to train as many individuals in our community. It doesn't matter your background. If you're a person who cares, you can learn skills to save a life.
When you say suicide prevention, obviously that doesn't just mean the person themselves. And probably they would be not, dare I say it, in a mood to come and get help. I'm guessing it's probably a lot for the people around them, you know, parents, friends, spouse, colleague, et cetera.
Absolutely. You're right. Prevention is not just the one-on-one conversation. It's a broader concept. And it's very hard for someone who is actively suicidal to ask for help because there is so much shame and so much stigma. And another part of our trainings is we're helping people understand that thoughts of suicide are our brain's way of telling us that we're hurting, that we need help, we need care. Just like a fever tells us that our body is sick. We have an illness. We need medical attention. Thoughts of suicide is no different. It's a medical experience that affects, you know, mental health functioning. And it's very hard to ask for help when you are in a very desperate frame of mind. So if family members, parents, teachers, clergy members, coworkers, if they're better equipped to identify when somebody might be struggling, again, make contact, reach out, check in and ask if how they're doing, then you can have those conversations where the person is not feeling as alone. And that can actually go a long way in preventing suicide.
And it's interesting, sometimes even a person who is aware of their suicidal and impulses. I'm thinking I'm a huge Ernest Hemingway fan. Hemingway committed suicide. Hemingway also once said, because his father committed suicide, people who think about suicide don't realize how great the world is once you get past that problem, which I thought was a very perceptive statement. But he obviously ultimately didn't follow those sentiments.
Suicide does not discriminate. Anybody can end up struggling, suffering, feeling alone. And sometimes our mind tells us there's no other option. Because when you're in a dark place, whatever the cause may be that you're thinking about what life is looking like, and if it feels very painful, alone, or terrible, living like that forever is hard to do. And so sometimes people may think, well, I don't have any other option. But there is hope. There's always hope. It takes reaching out to people, talking to people, and connecting them to resources. And the loss team, even though we are working with families after the worst has already happened, the person has already died by suicide, working with those families and getting them connected to care is suicide prevention. So it sort of goes back full circle because now the team is going to make sure those family members are not alone because, unfortunately, suicide death just has a ripple effect of pain. And so it becomes prevention for the surviving family members and friends.
I once worked in an organization. I had a colleague who lost his son, not to suicide. He lost him in a water skiing accident. And I saw him come to work every day, you know, after a period. And I thought to myself, how do you do it? I cannot imagine the loss of my child. How in the world do you cope? Is that part of what you're trying to help these people do?
Absolutely. So we are actively reaching out to organizations outside of Andrews, of course, but counseling groups, other mental health practices, church communities, faith-based leaders to see what kind of help is out there already, because this takes a community-wide approach. What help is out there that we can do the legwork, get the information, and then connect these grieving families too? Because when you're grieving, like regardless of the kind of death, like you mentioned, regardless of
yeah,
the
grief
death,
is grief.
Is grief. Exactly. There's shock. There's it's just so hard to think and function in the days afterwards. So the Lost Team volunteers that we're recruiting can help us bridge that gap and connect with other agencies who might be willing to help provide counseling services, support groups, grief groups. It's definitely a community-wide effort.
So what do you say? How do you start? I'm sure you've probably dealt personally in this, dealing with folks. Where do you start with somebody who has suffered just such an unimaginable loss?
It's listening to them. It's being there. So the Lost Team will deploy once we have connections made with law enforcement and first responders. The gold standard model is that we actually deploy the two trained volunteers, the lived experience person and the mental health worker, to the scene of a suicide death to provide immediate support while law enforcement is doing their job. I've been to scenes already. To be there with the person, sometimes you don't know the words to say, but sometimes it's just being there, not even saying anything. Mm-hmm. Offering a hug if they want a hug, offering a shoulder to cry on. Having the person there who has lost someone before to look that person in the eye and say, I've been where you are. Mm-hmm. And we can get through this. You're not alone.
Is it sometimes as a layperson, that strikes me as very early in the process, because I mean they're probably in absolute shock at that point.
Right.
I mean, barely even. How do you cope?
Right. It is pure shock. So Dr. Frank Campbell, he designed this model for postvention, the Lost Team model, in the. I believe in the 80s in Louisiana, and several states have adopted this. Texas had about 10 lost teams serving the entire state, which was nowhere near enough. So Andrews and several other local mental health authorities have partnered with Texas HHS to fund the development of our teams. Okay. So this model has been shown to be effective. And what Dr. Frank Campbell found in the early years of the model is immediate on-scene contact has shown to increase the frequency of those surviving families getting into whatever care works for them, whether it's counseling, family counseling, grief support versus no contact. And what makes the model so unique, and like you said, it's early, it's very fast. Because law enforcement are processing it, it's a crime scene in that moment. Before the deceased is removed, it's considered a crime scene. And so the family members have to be removed, not just from that room or that area, but sometimes from the house. They may be asked to stand a block away, stand in the front yard and wait and wait and wait. And the shock is there and they're waiting for what could be hours. It could be in the rain. It could be in cold weather. And if no one was there to talk to them in that moment of grief, that can be another isolating experience that could, again, lead to lots of suicide for themselves. So Lost Team members are also prepared to bring, we have what we call go bags with the resources. We have books, but we also have teddy bears. We also have coloring books because if there's children in the home, giving something for the children to occupy themselves while the scene is still being processed. Then after the scene has closed and in separation, Lost Team will continue to check on those family members, reach out, call. Do we want to meet up for coffee and just see how you're doing?
I suppose we ought to get into also what are the signs if you're worried. Being the father of an only daughter, I have been over the years, particularly when she was young, middle school, and all of that. We've already alluded to it. How cruel people can be.
Right.
Peers can be. I mean, everybody. There was always a kid that got picked on in school. There was always, you know, there was a bully and all of that. But there is some really focused cruelty out there that the parents of the other children ought to be addressing as well, because you don't treat people that way. But the object of that cruelty. There were times my daughter got pretty down.
So some of the bigger warning signs to look out for, like you mentioned, being down, being sad. So sadness, despair, isolation, not doing their favorite activities or hobbies. And if it's a kiddo, maybe their grades are slipping. They're not doing their homework. If it's an adult, maybe they're not again, doing their hobbies like they normally would. They're not exercising. They're not watching the sports like they would normally do. But sometimes it's also anxiety. So panic, being on edge, being agitated, being angry can be warning signs. But some of the biggest ones to look for, if a person is indicating whether verbally or text message, social media post, journal, but indicating that life is not worth living, that there's no hope, there's no future. I want to die. I want to be dead. I mean, these are very clear, direct statements, but sometimes the statements are indirect. I can't live like this anymore.
It's the worst day of my life.
It's the worst day.
and we palm it off. We slough it off as being just overly dramatic.
Sure. Right. And so that's what our workshops teach you, is when you start to hear things like that, how do you feel ready and prepared to ask a person, okay, so you said this is the worst day ever. How bad is it? Is it so bad that you would rather not be here? Would you rather not be alive? And that leads into the conversation, are you having thoughts of suicide? If so, what does that mean for you? Have you already done something or started to prepare something? And then when you ask these questions, you can help connect them to care. You can give that information to maybe the counselor, to if you feel this person is not safe alone. Maybe you do need to take them to Andrews Center or the hospital and have them evaluated. But just being prepared to hear those kind of comments and then follow up.
Do they tend to clam up at that point when you confront it directly?
It depends on the person. So prior to Andrews Center, I worked in clinical services for many, many years. So I've asked so many people about suicidal risk and have had to work with people in clinical care who were suicidal and homicidal too. There's just the whole spectrum. And it really depends. If a person is truly suicidal and they've been holding on to this emotional weight for so long, there's relief when you ask them. It's, oh my gosh, someone actually cares and somebody's willing to talk about it. There's relief. Sometimes there's pushback. You know, if somebody was like, oh no, why would you think that? Well, because I care, and you know, you have to explain the reason why.
Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah,
right. Exactly. But I will say one of the biggest myths about suicide that stops people from either getting help or asking if a person needs help is the idea that asking about it will put the thought into their mind. If I talk about it, if I ask this person I'm worried about, I might be giving them the idea to kill themselves. That's not true. That myth has been shown time and time and time again to not be true. When you ask a person who is truly suicidal about it, they start talking. They start becoming open to care, to maybe changing up their routine to get back into their hobbies or exercising again or whatever it is that they might need to. We've got to ask. We cannot be afraid to ask.
Well, and I've been focusing on kids, and I probably shouldn't, although that is obviously an issue. Maybe it's because that seems extraordinarily shocking when a young person with everything to live for, as we always say. But an older person, as you say, lost a spouse. Maybe they're retired. Maybe they're by themselves. The family is not near anymore. And they tend to think, why am I even here? Right. My life is over. I mean, what do I have to live for? Right. To watch TV? I mean, come on.
Yeah. Right. It's understandable, you know, when we start to feel lonely with those situations. And it is shocking when a child dies by suicide. It absolutely is. It's devastating at any age, really.
Yeah.
But statistically, and for a very long time, the group with the highest suicide death rates has consistently been middle-aged to older white men.
Okay.
That is the group that tends to lose the most individuals. Middle-aged to older white males die by suicide far more than any other group.
Is there any, probably no consistent reason because everybody's different, but is there any rationale for that that has been determined? Why that group?
And I don't want to be stereotypical.
Being one of those, I want to know why. Why us? Why me?
Right. And I don't want to perpetuate stereotypes, but unfortunately, there is a stereotype of men, of older men, not talking when they are struggling, not being open to mental health services, not being open to help. You know, I think men sometimes more than women, but women too, feel like they have to be tough. feel like they have to be strong and not vulnerable. And sure. Especially if they are maybe the head of the household, or they feel responsible for their wife,
everything.
Their kids, everything.
Yes.
Exactly. And so
you feel like the world is on your shoulders, your kids, your wife, your family, everybody is depending on you.
Right. Right. And then when you, again, if you lose a spouse or go through divorce or retirement, mm-hmm. and you feel, wait a minute, my identity, my focus was taking care of all these people, right. and I'm losing these people. What is my identity now? And because I think men tend to hold it in more so than women, then they suffer in silence. And that's when we have suicide deaths. Mm-hmm. So we really need to encourage men of all ages and everyone, honestly, to seek help, to talk to somebody, talk to your doctor, tell them I've had thoughts of ending my life. Something has to change, but we won't know until someone feels safe enough to talk about it.
And the part of that whole macho thing is also, if I talk about it, I seem like a weakling, you know.
Right.
What kind of guy goes to the doctor and says, I feel depressed? Yeah.
Right. Which we know is not true. Men suffer just as women suffer, adults and children. We are emotional creatures, and sometimes we need extra help and support, whatever the circumstances. And it's not limited to just people with mental health diagnoses.
I will confess, he didn't commit suicide, and he was not suicidal. But I also saw in my own father, for example, as he got older, he would ask my brothers and I to climb on the roof and adjust the antenna. He would, you know, maybe supervise helping me work on my car because it was too hard. And I think he resented that. Mm-hmm. There are things he couldn't do anymore, or a lot of trouble, a lot of effort, and he had gotten older. So I could see that disappointment. And maybe if you were a more sensitive person than my dad, that would hit you harder. Life changes. Change with age. Yeah.
Life changes, or just adapting to a new normal as we get older. And that's a hard, you know, thing for a lot of us to deal with getting older.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
It's like, why are my knees hurting? They didn't hurt when I stood up yesterday. What's going on?
I used to be able to get up without making noises. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yep. I'm there now, too.
Okay. We've got a couple of minutes left. You have a class coming up.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Explain what's going to happen if somebody says, you know, I think I could help people.
Yes. Okay. If you are interested in being a part of the Lost Team or seeing what it's all about, first, either email us at lostteam@andrewcenter.com mm-hmm. to claim a seat. You can also call us at 903-752-8306 to let us know that you want to RSVP for a seat. The training is going to be held at Andrews Center, 2323 West Front Street here in Tyler, and it's going to be from 9 to 4. And what to expect, it's going to be a mixture of some suicide prevention information, mm-hmm. but more so what the Lost Team model is all about. It's going to have some information about crime scene etiquette. Mm-hmm. It'll have information about why the model works, what kind of care is required, and it's going to focus primarily on the model. It's sort of the onboarding orientation. Mm-hmm. And then after that, if a person says, you know what, I'm ready, and this is for me, mm-hmm. we're going to have follow-up trainings on specific suicide prevention skills, how the deployed team is going to operate and scheduling. But keep in mind, too, we're also looking for volunteers who may not go to the scenes or may not immediately interact with family members. We're looking for volunteers that might help us with fundraiser activities, mm-hmm. marketing activities, maybe volunteers who might write caring messages to people, or, you know, things like that. So I would really recommend, if anyone is interested in supporting our community after the worst has happened by suicide, to consider coming to our training on Friday, January 23rd.
I'm sitting here, as you say that, I'm sitting here thinking it's going to be somewhat of a special kind of person who can walk into a situation like that.
Yes, absolutely.
And try to help wrangle help for people. Yeah.
Right. We never want anyone who is in an emotional state to feel obligated to help others. We have to practice self-care, and that's something we talk about in our team training, is taking care of our team members, because like you said, it does take a special person to be able to serve in this capacity, but we have to protect those folks because we're vulnerable too. We don't want people to be emotionally activated to the point where now they're at risk.
Yeah.
So, yeah, things to consider.
Mari Gutierrez, thank you so much.
Thank you,
I appreciate it. Great work. And thank you, guys. And we will see you next week.
In Focus is a weekly public affairs program featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place. In Focus is produced by KTBB and the Team Sports Radio. And we thank you for listening. Join us again next week.